This is the Sports Radio 610 Outdoors Show with Captain Mickey Eastman.
Mickey broke the record at Camp Denny's on oysters, about however many you can eat.
Captain Mickey has been guiding the Texas Gulf Coast waters for over 40 years, and along with winning numerous national and local tournaments, Captain Mickey was recently inducted into the Saltwater Legends Hall of Fame.
The reason I broke the record is I don't think I had enough money in my pocket to pay for all of them. Because if you break the record, everybody with you eats free.
Now here's your host, Captain Mickey.
Welcome to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Thursday morning. I'm Captain Mickey Eastman, producing the Outdoor Show. This morning is Jace. Our sponsors today, Allied Industrial Sales Incorporated and Boyd's One Stop. All right, weather. Got rain coming. Got a little bit of light rain in the area, but heavier rain's down below us and moving this way. All right, looking at current temperatures right now, 65 down on the island in Galveston with light rain. And looks like today's forecast, cloudy with periods of rain, becoming windy for the afternoon. High of 71. East winds will be 20 to 30. That rain chance, 90%. They're talking rainfall totals around a half inch and higher wind gust along with it. And then for tonight, cloudy with periods of rain, low of 67. Southeast winds 15 to 25 and 80% chance of rain. Another half inch tonight. And then for tomorrow, rain showers in the morning with thunderstorms developing. Later in the afternoon, gusty winds and small hail are possible. We don't want any of that. High of 73, southeast winds 15 to 25. That chance about 60%. And looking at tides for today, these are Galveston Channel tide predictions. And we have four of them. We're sitting on a high right now. It was a 1.3 around 2 this morning. Next tide is a low at 9:33 a.m. It's an 0.1, then a high at 4:27 p.m., a 1.2, and then a low at 9:28 p.m., an 0.7. 7:14 a.m. sunrise, 7:35 p.m. sunset. Moon phase, 10%. All right, currently right now, looks like Galveston North Jetty, it's south at about 12 down there, 14 around Tiki Island, looks like about 9 miles per hour at San Luis Pass. And up in the complex, Eagle Point's 11, Morgan's Point about 12. So not too much wind, but they are forecasting a lot more later today. So anyway, try to stay dry. That's going to be the big deal. See how much rain we get out of that. South Texas is getting some much-needed rain down that way. Man, that area is parched big time all through Corpus, Victoria, San Antonio. Everything is going to get a lot of rain out of this. Some areas are showing anywhere from 9 to 12 inches. Goodness. Flash flooding now. All right. Let's go over to Sabine Lake and check in with Captain Bill Watkins this morning and see what he's up to. Good morning, Bill. What's happening?
Hey, buddy. All I can say is I'm glad they're getting some rain over in South Texas. That's a good thing.
This will be timely, you know, just like they got last year in deep South Texas, which boosted the horn production on deer and just tons of quail.
Yeah, that's good for them. I was hoping that they would get a lot of this, but, you know, it's been, we've had enough of it here. It started raining.
Yeah, I'm just drying
here.
Out good around my place, you know.
Oh, yeah, me too. Now I'm going to be buried again, I guess. But we'll figure out how to handle it.
Yeah, and my bay's shaping up nice. Man, the watercolor's good everywhere. And, you know, we got rid of a lot of that fresh water with those dumping northers. And, you know, we got green water again instead of that old brown.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's coffee with cream in it over here, everywhere.
Yeah.
From end to end and wall to wall.
Amazing.
I went yesterday, and, I mean, we just got those two big rivers, and they're just, I'll tell you a phenomenon that I witnessed yesterday. We've talked about this years ago, but the tide was rising at 10:30. and the current was still going to the Gulf.
I've seen that before up my way, buddy. A lot of current.
Yeah.
Moving from north to south and got a tide coming in underneath it. Isn't that strange how that it occurs?
Yeah, the current's still going out. It just slowed down a little bit.
Yeah.
That's weird. I hadn't seen that in a lot of years, but man, you know, good grief. But we caught 21 nice trout.
Well, that's good.
I mean, that'll yeah. Work.
That's saying and something, really off-colored water like that.
Well, I know how to deal with it. That's the whole thing.
But, you know, it's a different animal over there. I remember the first time I went over there, I'm going, man, everybody's catching fish in this mess. I mean, I could get over there. I remember the first time I ever came over and pulled up to the causeway there to put in, and I'm going, man, what a mud hole. And I think my third or fourth cast with a topwater ghost or something, I forget what I was throwing, kawoom, you know, a 7-pound trout. And I said, well, I guess it don't matter over here. Then I talked to this old boy at the ramp. He said, oh, man, these fish over here don't care. They're used to it. That muddy water don't
care. Evidently,
flow,
they are.
That was a first
it's
for
comical.
Me.
Comical. Yeah.
I said, how many fish are over here if you can catch them like this in this kind of water, man?
Well, they're not that big anymore, but there's still solid three-pounders out there.
We just need a few years, you know, no disasters, and just make our comeback. Yeah. You know, we're in the same shape over here as you are over there. We're just trying to grow bigger fish, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully we can
bigger
see
trout
that accomplished.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, and I know that those trout were tide runners because one of them had developing eggs. I said, oh, okay, here we go. You know, this is just late March. So that fish come out of the Gulf. There's no way it come out of the lake because all those fish are still, you know, they're still, their row is still small.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't even developed, begin to develop. So, and I know I could have caught fish yesterday on white, and that's what we actually threw. It's kind of a white ice color, but I think we could have caught them on that lime truce, you know, that bright yellow looking color.
Oh, yeah.
I think they would have hit that too. I just, you know, I've been throwing white, so, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, true. And, if it's working, I mean, how do you switch over?
Yeah, we caught those fish. You know, it was the current was already the tide was dead low when we got there. I had to climb out of the causeway dock down into the
down
boat.
In the boat.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. And you know, for an old man like me, that. A little bit difficult. Have to be real careful climbing over that wall.
Yes.
And get down in the boat. The tide was bottomed out. I mean, as low as I've seen it, there was areas of Lighthouse Cove that had the shell was sticking out a foot.
Right.
That's how low it was, and you don't see that very often.
Nope.
And At 10:30, it started coming up, and it covered every little hump out there, and just worked out. And there was still a few fish biting while that tide was rising. It just slowed the current down going out.
Yeah,
it slowed down a little bit. At first, it was just rushing out. Just like flushing a toilet. It's terrible looking.
Yeah, you got a river current coming in from two rivers into the bay and then an outgoing tide with it. It can make for some really strong current. But we used to do that. We'd be over in the East Shoreline this time of year waiting, and you'd have the river running, and you'd have that current, you know, looking out in the bay. It'd be moving from right to left, northeast to southwest. but the water's coming up.
Yeah.
Like you're waiting, and it keeps getting deeper on you. And, man, the fish just, I guess, that layer of salt water underneath rolling up under that fresh. Those fish like it. They,
yeah.
You know, the dirty stuff on top kind of kills the light. And you have more darkness underneath. Those fish feel safer. I don't know what it is, but
they come up shallower.
Yeah, and as that condition prevails, or you know, shallow water, and these fish are wanting to be shallow. I mean, all up and down the coast, they're wanting to crawl up on the bank right now.
Yeah, and that I could see as I was coming up the out of the ship channel. I could see the boomerangs down there.
Right.
You know, because a lot of fish were down in that salt layer, way down there, 20 foot.
Right.
They were there, but it's like, I mean, all sizes of fish. And I'm thinking, man, oh, man, you know, I wonder if they'll be there. And I saw two or three wandering seagulls hitting in the same general area. Actually, they were terns. You know,
right.
The more big yeah. terns that
the
you
big
like
ones,
to see.
The yellow bill and black eyebrows, buddy, they're fish finders.
Yeah, yeah, those cool guys.
They're fish
they
hawks.
Were, they would ease down and dip briefly, just three of them. I said, okay, I think that's good enough that I can do what I need to do. So I pulled in there in about 3 foot of water, throwing to 1.5. And the shell is so high, you know, it's so the water is shallow, and the shell is so tight in there, you're going to get hung up if you
right.
start reeling immediately. So, and here's something, a tip for people to try. You just slow roll that jig in plastic, 1/4 ounce head with a soft plastic on it, and just slow roll it, just like a spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm.
Or a swim jig, just roll it. Just crank it and don't jig it, don't do nothing. And those fish will knock the living daylights out of it. And that's kind of a phenomena that I found in heavy current, that you just throw it across the current and let the current take it around whichever way it's going and slow roll it. And they'll tear it out of your hand. So that's how we caught them. Once I figured that out, if you just jigged it, you'd be stuck in the shell. That's how shallow it was.
Yeah,
but
that,
they were out there.
People don't realize. They think because they're jigging it, they're able to keep the bait up. But actually, when you jig, that rod tip goes back to its original position and allows that bait to drop. If you hold the rod up and in real constantly, it'll hold the bait up and won't let it go down in the shell.
Now you can do that in 3 foot of water. You can throw down current and just jig it. Just the current will hold it up. Just jig it.
But up current or side current, it's a different scenario.
Yeah, you ain't throwing up. If you throw up current, you're stuck.
You're hung up immediately.
You're gonna know. You're not gonna get that bait back. Unless you're really lucky, got some 30-pound braid, maybe, you know, you might bend the hook.
Yeah.
That's how bad that shell is. It's pretty interesting. It's an interesting day. I haven't done that since last year at this time, but it works.
That's amazing how those fish down there where you're talking about in that area, when they're like that in that 20 feet of water, I mean, it's almost impossible to catch them. But as soon as they roll up one ledge or two to anywhere from 8 feet up, they're catchable. They just eat like crazy. Isn't that amazing how that happens?
I haven't figured out how to catch them when they're 20 foot down.
I know. It's just
I've played with them and
go out there and just go dormant or something. It's weird.
Yeah.
And you know you're dragging your lure through fish. I mean, you're getting down there in them.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
All right, well, let me take a commercial break. I'll be right back at you, Bill. Hang on a second, buddy. All right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Outdoor Show. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It's 419. All right, Bill, we are back, my friend.
Well, I'm here with you.
All right.
So, at times, you just have to go south until you find fish, and that might take you all the way to the Gulf.
Yes.
But, there's fish. There's fish up in the lake, too. I moved off my position on the Louisiana shoreline, which was about halfway down, and then there's fish there too. But that's a whole different category of fish.
Mm-hmm.
They're only in certain areas, and I know that there's fish out in the lake, probably way out in there in the middle of that southern part of the lake. Just off the shoreline, out there somewhere,
mm-hmm.
Scattered out.
Well, that's needling the haystack trying to look for those fish, unless they come up under birds or a lot of slinging going on and all that. Then you can target them just to go out there and just piddle around and look for them with no signs. That's flip a coin.
You may get lucky
and you may not. That's the way that is.
Yeah, it's better to fish the shoreline. It's better to fish the shoreline than try to catch scattered fish that are moving up than it is to try to attack that main lake.
Yeah.
You're just not going to have any success with that.
It's just too vast, unless you just
too vast.
Get lucky and cut adrift and just drift into them, get lucky,
Yeah, and you might catch one, you might not. But the ones that are coming up to feed, they're going to be on points, flanks of points, corners, maybe the mouth of a ditch, a bow. That's the standard places. And at least I've never figured out how to catch them. When the tide drops and drops and drops and drops, and gets bottomed out, and they're off the shoreline somewhere. They scatter finally. They move out so far, and once you get to about 3 foot, 3.5 foot of water, you're going to not catch one past that. They go break out way out there.
Yeah.
And scatter. Because it's a flick of their tail to get back to the bank.
Oh, yeah.
From
nothing.
Where they are, And how they know where the shoreline is, I don't know.
They do.
they somehow do.
You got it.
Yeah, they're sniffing it out.
They know.
Yeah, they do. They follow that gradient in some way. I mean, once you get out there where it's an even flat bottom with little shell pads and stuff, that 4 foot, 5 foot, 6 foot of water. How do they know how to get back from out there? But they do. And as the water clears and salts up, and you get a good tide up on the bank, all of a sudden they're there. And the water might not be that clear at all. It might just clear up just where you can see down about 3 inches. And then there they are.
Right.
So, it's a special world over here, and I'm sure Calcasieu's the same way. I've fished it, too, and it can get really dirty.
It really can.
And you just got to know where they're going to be given the right situations. And once you narrow that search down, by George, you can catch them.
How about your jetties down there? Y'all got any kind of jetty run or anything going on out there? Like over here, here and everywhere
I'm
else.
Sure.
The Drum runs on Bull Reds. Everything's happening.
Oh yeah, Drum and Sheephead.
Yeah,
they're out there.
Yeah, I'm Sheephead. Oh yeah. Man,
yep. They you go out there and fish those rocks, and they're there. I mean, this time of year, they're They're solid out there. And it starts in about February. Those drum, the black drum, puppy drum, they move in there, and they're against those rocks.
Right.
And, you know, sheephead are up in the, they're up in the lower channel, and just hanging around. And you got to use a, you know, fish those rocks properly. You got to use a popping cork and a jig with a piece of shrimp on it, something like that.
Right.
And you can catch those things.
Yeah, I've saw that more over there than anywhere else, tipping the end of a jig with, you know, a piece of shrimp.
Yeah. If you want to catch drum and sheephead, that's the cool way to do it.
Yeah.
And you can, you can use live shrimp.
Yeah, I've seen them do that for flounder, too, you know, tipping a jig while they're flounder fishing on the bottom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you don't usually need a popping cork for that. You just drag it on the bottom. Yeah, and I like a piece of shrimp on a hook a little bit better than I like gulp. Gulp is just, that stuff's nasty. I know. I know that people catch fish on it.
Oh, it works. I mean, I mess my hands up. I don't know what's in that, you know, liquid that's soaking in, you know.
Yeah.
Gulp live or whatever they call it. But we used that a lot during, you know, redfish tournaments back in the day. Especially in Florida when it was hard to trick those fish. And you just had to dead stick gulp up under those mangroves and stuff. That was a different kind of fishing. I didn't enjoy it. I like working a lure and getting crushed and sitting down on him,
yeah,
ripping his head off. You know.
Did you use popping corks for that?
No, we just dead sticked it. You know, with a jig.
Just pitch it up under.
Just put
there,
it up on a jig and just, you know, skip it up under the mangroves and let it sit. Because those redfish, you'd see them, they just swim in a circle around those mangrove islands, or back if you're on a. On a bank, it'd go back and forth. And just hope when they swim through, you know, the big one, a tournament red, picks it up and you suck him out of there.
Yeah, they're patrolling all the time.
All the time, like sharks, never stop moving.
Yep, they may be feeding and they may not.
Yeah, a lot of times they weren't over there. That was tough to catch them.
I think there's a lot of times they don't over here, too. But we don't see them as well.
No.
Because it's not as clear.
Exactly.
I had a friend of mine back in December. He said the tide was falling out pretty good up there in Coffee Ground Cove. And the water was pretty darn clear at that time. Still mid-month. Hadn't started raining yet. And he said there was schools of 15 to 20 slot reds swimming right by them. Mm. And they could not get them to hit. Nothing. They tried spoons. They tried everything in the world. And they just swim around the bait, you know.
Those dynamite schools.
Yeah.
Throw some dynamite in them. You know, I had a guy at a seminar one time ask me, he said, well, would you rather not catch them and not see them, or see them and not catch them? I had to think about that for a minute. I said, well, not catching is not catching. I'd rather not do either. I'd rather catch them.
That's right. That's a good question.
Yeah.
You think about it.
Made me pause a minute and think about that. I'm going, well.
Yeah, because when you can see them and you can't get them to bite, that can be frustrating.
I think it's more frustrating than not seeing them and not catching them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, down here, when I see them tailing down the bank of a bayou or even on the lake shore, tide be up and they'll be swimming right down the bank, I can catch them. It seems like when their tails are up, you can throw a bait in there and you can catch them. But if they're under the water and just easing along, sometimes that can be really difficult. I've run into that situation here. You know, several times. It's rare. They usually will bite if you fiddle with them enough. You just have to try different things. But you get little pods of them scattered down the shoreline that are laying in the mud, you can catch those.
Yes.
They're hungry. They're waiting on something. But you don't see them. You know, even when the water's clear over here, you don't see them. You rarely ever see one move. They're just laying in the dirt. You know, maybe they're halfway covered up or whatever with the mud.
Right.
And boy, when you bounce that jig past them, one of them's going to, they're just like cats. One of them's going to come get it. And then you stick the stick in the mud and fish around there. And then a lot of times you'll catch 10.
Yeah, usually you hook that first one, it gets all the rest of them fired up too.
Yes, you just keep working that bait around in them, and they'll all finally bite. You know, you'll miss some, and they'll, you know, bump you lower and stuff like that. They're interesting fish to fish for, you know, and I would imagine that if you could see into the water, there's bass do the same thing. You know, a lot of them will follow your bait and turn away and all this kind of stuff that they do, you know, or they'll bump at it, you know, mouth your worm and spit it out,
mm-hmm.
or come right up and slap at your spinner bait. If they don't get the hook, you know, you go, what was that? I know I felt something. But it's never ending source of amazement to me how fish can do. And one time yesterday, we pulled up on one position, had a kind of a little curve, underwater curve, and the shell tide was running up out of deep water on top of that. And we threw up there. We all cast out, all four of us, and one of the guys hooked a 3-pound trout, and that's the only fish that was there. I mean, that trout jumped on that bait as soon as it hit the water. And you think, how in the world did that fish get to that bait that fast? Immediately, before you get your reel in gear, he's on it. Now that sucker was up there to eat. But he was by himself, or herself. That one had eggs. That's a funny thing. And there was no more fish there. Cast for 10 minutes. Nothing. That's just amazing how those fish do.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I've seen it over the years. You know, you pull up in an area to fish it, and first cast, somebody catches one, and then you don't get a bite. After that,
yeah, you think it's on.
Yeah, if you get one first cast, fire up and move on. You're not going to get another one. That's crazy how that works. That's those school bus days, like, man.
Yeah,
we've all had them.
Then you'll hit an area and you catch one on the first cast, and then there's a wad of them there. We hit that in one spot yesterday. I bet we caught 10 trout out of that one spot.
Well, I like when you pull up and everybody hooks up on first cast, and, hey, then you got them.
Yeah, that's right.
When four rods blow up at once, say, oh, goodness.
Yeah, here you get a three-way like that, it's on.
You got it, man.
But anyway, it's fun to...
Chinese fire drill. Let's get on with it. All right, Bill, well, I got to roll, my friend. If somebody wants to call you about coming over and hooking up with you, doing a little fishing this year, how do they get a hold of you? Give them some info.
409-673-9211.
All right,
man.
Well, watch this old weather. Hope South Texas and the Hill Country, all that, get all the rain, and we'll get spared. We don't need any. We're just right now.
Yeah, we do. I hope that it doesn't come over here like they say it is, but we can handle the local rain. It'll just run right out.
Yeah, just don't rain up north.
What comes up in northeast Texas is what gets us.
You got it, man.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, take care.
Bill, have a good day. Good talking to you, man. See you. All right. Well, anglers, are you ready to hook into something big? It's time for the Matagorda Slam Fishing Tournament. That's happening Friday, April 25th, down in Matagorda, Texas. And they're kicking things off on Thursday night on the 24th. And Join us at the captain's meeting in Calcutta and dinner at Rusty Hook Ranch. Rudy's Barbecue, cold drinks, and a chance to get in on the action before the Lions even hit the water. So then it's game on. Safe Light launch the next morning, 2 to 4 p.m. at the harbor will be the way in. Bring your A game. And entry's only $400 a team. And this includes all-you-can-eat crawfish on Saturday at the legendary Matagorda Slam Crawfish Cook-Off. And proceeds will benefit the Hookspit Junior Anglers Association, helping get more kids on the water and into the great outdoors. Spots are filling fast, so register today at matagordaslam.com. That's matagordaslam.com, and get ready to slam them. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. 437 here in the Bayou City. Let's run up Lake Conroe Way. Let's check in with our good friend, the Fish Dude. Richard, good morning. What's up?
Not a lot, Mickey. How you doing this morning?
Man, I'm hanging out. It's all good.
Good deal. Good deal. Nothing wrong with that.
These weather forecasts, but hey.
I was sitting there looking at the radar. It's looking pretty grim down there right now, but it looks like the lake might even catch some, too. So it's one of them deals. I ain't going to be on the water today or tomorrow anyway, so it's one of them things. So I just hope that wind don't get up like it's been getting up. That's one of the main things, because that stuff, man, it gets destructive out there. The other day after a windstorm, there was all kinds of stuff floating around the lake.
So, man, I didn't get any rain out of that front. What was that, Sunday night, you know, Monday morning?
Right.
I heard thunder. It woke me up at like 3 in the morning, and, man, we had a wall of wind come through. Good.
Yeah, I know. That was crazy. And that lightning
was
good.
All that hail, north of us. Did you see some of those hail storms up there?
I did, because I talked to my cousin over in Lano, and he said, no, that happened down around Kerrville. So
Kerrville got smoked, dude.
I know. So that's crazy. Just one of them things. But no, today's one of them days. My wife found out she got cervical and breast cancer, so we're going down there to see what all is going to happen with all that stuff. I know. So that's what we're going to be dealing with today. So and tomorrow. So that's why I ain't working.
Man,
today
I'm so
tomorrow.
Sorry to hear that. That's hard.
Yeah, we don't know where she's at with it yet. So hopefully, I'm always the cup half full guy anyway. So so far it's well, you know, we don't know a whole lot of. Yeah. I mean, you just don't know how it's going to go. So you just got to stay positive about it all and just keep on trucking. That's the main thing. So, well, like I say, today and tomorrow we go down there and talk to them people down there at MD Anderson, see what's going on. So hopefully we can get it all worked out and keep on trucking. That's the main thing. So it's all good. But no, I'll tell you what, I fished Tuesday night, and them boys, they weigh in some pretty good sacks in. I mean, three fish for 18 pounds, that's pretty dang good. And
I promise you.
I'll tell you what. And what's so bad is I was sitting there, and I do this a lot now. It's kind of giving up one of my secrets that I shouldn't be giving up, but I'm going to give it up anyway. This time of year, you know, you got all these fish on the beds and everything. And I walked the banks a lot, and I looked for fish. Well, I just happened to find one that I know was over 10 pounds. I mean, I was sitting there looking at her, and she's on a bed, and this other guy was walking the bank, too. He's apparently does the same stuff that I do. And he was sitting there walking the bank, and I stopped right there on her and trying to make her go away, and she did. And I he had apparently walked by her earlier anyway, and I told him, I said, don't tell me you saw that one right there. He said, oh, I've been watching her all day. I said, okay.
knew that fish was there.
he knew that fish was there too. So, because we were going to be fishing against each other in like an hour. So I said, well, dang it. I told him, I said, well, since you've been watching her all day, I ain't going to come in here on you. I'm not even going to try, because it takes too long to get back into that area. And I didn't. You got a 3-hour tournament, and I just didn't want to waste.
Yeah, Tuesday night deal. That's you don't have much time. It's better,
right? And I just
the closer you can find them to the dock, the better for you. You get more fishing time.
That's exactly right. So that's what I was doing, trying to find them a little bit closer to where I didn't have a bunch of idle time, because it's a lot of no wake zones that you had to go through to get to that fish. Yeah. And I just didn't feel like going to that area. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just let you have it. And then when I came in, weighed in, I asked him if they got it. And he said, no. When we got there, there were two boats sitting on top of her. And it's like, okay. That's another reason
you wasted all that. Y'all weren't the only ones.
Apparently not. So, but I mean, there was. I know for a fact there was two 10-pounders within 100 yards. So that's it would have been nice. And I told him, I said, man, and I told him where the other one was because he didn't know about the other one. I said, man, there's a 10 right here, and I know it was a 10 because a kid had caught it the day before and weighed it in, and then but you can't see it. It wasn't a visible fish. It was just there. You had to know where it was at and catch it. And then that one that was obviously on a bed, and she was working that bed real hard because she was rolling on it and all kinds of stuff, tail up. I mean, everything you could ask for in a bed fish. And so that's 20 pounds in two right there. So it's, I thought, man, y'all get those two right there, and I'll be glad for you. I'm going to go run up here and do this thing because I had some fish found in the back of Caney Creek where the MLF guys were. You know, nothing, no giants, but just some good, consistent fish. And I popped one off a bed over there, it's about a 3.5-4 pound fish. So no giant, but I figured, you know, if I could get me 3 5-pounders, you know, finish up with 15 pounds, I'd end up in the money. Well, I didn't do it. I ended up with three that weighed a little over 9.5, something like that. And so I kind of finished the upper middle pack. So, but it's, it's one of them things where I got my three weighed in and it's all good. But what was even better is I was catching most of them on that old school pop R. You know, that was
a little pop R.
Other than the bed fish, pop R, I got that pop R out, and man, the problem is in that grass, I lost a real good one in that grass because it just drug me down in it and buried up in that grass. And you can't play tug of war with 14-pound test and that stuff. So
no, it's, you can't.
I'm thinking about getting some of that. I got some of that Smackdown braid, that cigar braid, that 30-pound stuff.
Yeah, that's good stuff. It's strong.
Yeah, I'm thinking about
it too. You know, it's their 30s like 20, but it's strong like 30.
That's the thing right there. So I got it, and I'm thinking, you know, put that on that pop R because it'll float too, so it kind of helps you out in two ways. And that way I can pull on them when they get to burying up like that instead of having to, because I had my power poles down and I'd have to raise up and get on that trolling motor, run over to them and try to drag them out. And I had two or three of them that did me that way. So it's, but it's all hindsight. You know, I'll do it next Tuesday because those fish will still be there. You know, they're not going to go anywhere. They're in that grass and they just kind of scatter and spread out in different areas. You know, and one thing about that stuff is the grass fixing to start matting up. So they'll turn into a frog bite before it's over with anyway. And that water in there is just gin clear. I mean, it's clear as a bell. You can see down. I mean, you can see 2-3 feet deep down in it, and but you can see the top of the grass too. So, you know, it's coming. And that's the thing about all that hydrilla and stuff.
I love it, man. When that grass is, you know, a couple of feet under the surface and you can work baits above that. And those bass come out of the grass to grab that bait, you know, whether it's a top or just no weight on a worm. And that's fun, man.
It is fun. I mean, it's just a blast, you know, but the big thing is them dang old carp are thick in there. Good night, those carp are thick. Now, they're just, you know, one thing about them is they're the German carp, so they're spawning. And that's, you know, I get people all the time tell me, oh, those white Amur, the grass carp, they're spawning. No, those are German carp.
No, they don't spawn.
Totally different animal. They don't do the same things. But those German carp, I mean, they are so thick in a couple of those pockets in there.
Yeah, it's white Amur, one of those, like, Chinese carp or Asian carp or something.
It's triploid is what it is. Now, the Asian carp is that jumping thing that jumps over there.
Yeah, that's the one that you see videos when they're jumping out of the water and hitting everybody.
Yeah, hitting you.
Yeah, okay.
That's it. Yeah, those dang things there, I'm glad we ain't got none of them yet. They're coming, you know. They're in the Mississippi River, I'm sure.
Well, they're an invasive species. They want you to kill every one of them.
every one of them, just like we were talking about the other day with the tilapia and with the grass carp.
Why we try all this stuff and put all this stuff into our waters, man, you know?
Well, you know, believe it or not, and this is how I kind of stand on the hydrilla control stuff, I would much rather them put the grass carp in the lake than do any of the poisoning, okay? Because we've had this conversation before about if you put Roundup on your fence and your dog goes and eats it, he's going to die of cancer. I mean, that's just going to happen. And you're doing the same thing in the water system, and you can't tell me you can filter that stuff out and make drinking water for people. That's a big thing with me, you know, because back in the early 80s, they had a deal up here at the Huntsville State Park, Parks and Wildlife did. It was a town hall type thing where they wanted to discuss the hydrilla control in that particular lake. And there's three options. You've got the grass carp, you've got spraying it, and you've got hydrilla cutters. Okay, the hydrilla cutters cut 4 feet below the surface, and they can go 4 feet below the surface across the whole lake. But the problem is, hydrilla grows at the rate of 6 inches a day. So you're mowing the grass once a week is what you're basically doing. So it's not cost effective to do it. The spraying the poison on it, I've never been a believer in that because of the fact that everybody is going to drink it at some point. You know, if you're drinking any water that comes from any treatment facility or anything like that, like Houston, like Conroe, all of those have treatment facilities on there for drinking water, and you're poisoning the water and saying you're filtering it out and it's not going to cause cancer, that's baloney. So I'm a firm believer in use your natural resource like the grass carp. I mean, that carp, he's not going to poison you. He's not going to reproduce, and you can control how many you put in the water to make sure that it controls the grass, not eliminates it. And that's where everything went haywire when they first put the grass carp in Lake Conroe back in the 80s. When they first put those in, this is my understanding that Parks and Wildlife had kind of turned it over to Texas A&M because they're a research school. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to research how the grass carp affected and how much they ate and did all that. They want to do all the studies on it. So Parks and Wildlife recommended 3 to 5 grass carp per vegetated acre, okay? And A&M, in turn, put 3 to 5 per surface acre. So that was the mistake that happened then. And then since then, you know, we had Harvey come in and the hydrilla came back and all that, and it came back really thick. And everybody said, oh, they're going to do the carp again. Yeah, well, yeah, they need to. And they did. And they put just the right amount in. They didn't eliminate all the grass, but it eliminated the vast majority of it, and especially in the areas that were choked off on the south end of the lake where you have most of your ski boats and things like that. So they couldn't even get out of their docks. The grass was so thick. And so you had whole creeks that were completely choked off. Now they're open and clear. But that's where they put the majority of the carp was down there. And on the north end, they put limited amounts of them. So that's why we've got grass in certain areas, is because those limited amounts were in there. Now, that you know, they didn't travel that far. You know, that's what people don't realize. If they got enough to eat in one spot, they're not going to go very far. And then their life expectancy is 20 years. So, you know, that's the thing. And they've always told me, if you ever see anyone that says they've caught a grass carp that they thought has been reproduced or has produced, have them send it to us because they don't do it. You know, I'm sitting there going, okay. So I get people all the time telling me, oh, they're doing it. No, they're not. I promise you, they are not reproducing. So it's just like the hybrids. They don't reproduce. It's not going to happen. You know, it's just one of those things where people see a different subspecies, and then that's automatically that's what they're doing. No, it's not. It's just that's what they think they're doing. And they are, for a German carp, they are. But, I mean, there's some monster German carp out there right now. The other day I hit one with my trolling motor.
Well, Rayburn's got a lot of them. You'll be fishing, you know, at buck brush and hydrilla and everything, and you'll see them come up and blow up on the water, you know, and slap their tail.
Oh, my gosh. They scare the mess out of you.
Boy, that was a big bass. I said that was a big old German carp is what that was.
Yeah, it was. I guarantee a big goldfish is what that one
was. That's exactly right.
Ain't no doubt about it. But no, that's the thing. You know, I hit one with my trolling motor the other day. I thought, man, that thing's gonna snap my trolling motor shaft in half. You know, I mean,
I bumped a tarpon one time over Sabine Lake with a trolling motor.
Oh, no,
Lord, talk about wake up the dead.
I guarantee you,
slow and everybody's quiet in the boat, and man, I bumped that thing in the back down there by Lighthouse Cove, and he's launched.
Oh, my goodness.
And all my guys are going, what in the world was that?
It's a big minnow.
I said, I guarantee you, y'all just better be glad he didn't come in the boat. He went the other
way. No kidding. I guarantee you that thing would have whooped all y'all to death. Oh, there ain't no doubt about that. There ain't no doubt. Goodness, I'll tell you what. But it's funny how certain fish do that, you know, not like that Asian carp, for example. I mean, those dang things are horrible. I mean, you got to wear a dang motorcycle helmet and probably need to wear a collar, too. That way it don't break your neck when they hit you in the head.
When you hit one on plane, buddy, that's not.
Yeah, I know. It ain't, I promise you, because you remember here several years ago, that woman got killed over in Florida from a stingray when they get to flying, you know, those dang things. Get to flying every once in a while, that thing flew up and hit her head.
Those things launch a lot. You see it a lot in Florida. They'll launch out of the water like that.
That's, I don't know nothing about them, but I know whenever you see a sheet of fly.
So one of them hits you right between the eyes while you're running.
I guarantee you that, because that's a sheet of plywood coming at you is what that is.
That's right.
I mean, that ain't going to feel good at all, I promise you. But it's, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where we know to pay attention to things like that, and sometimes you just can't avoid it. But other times, I mean, other people don't even have a clue that things like that just launch out of the water. I mean, I was coming in from offshore one time, and the dang Spanish mackerel jumped in the boat.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's like,
you know what always scares me is, how about running and a dolphin jumps up in there and ends up in the boat?
Oh my gosh, that would really hurt. That wouldn't be nice at all.
The console, everything out.
Everything. I guarantee you, that's a 500-pound fish jump right in there on you. I mean, that would destroy everything. I mean, and there's nothing you could do. I mean, no. I mean, absolutely nothing you could do to stop it. I mean, that's a bad feeling right there, just even thinking about something like that. Because that rascal
fishing down in South America, I forget, not Costa Rica, somewhere down there, and they were fishing the mouth of this river, and the sharks were terrible. They were tarpon fishing, and they had a tarpon jump in the boat and completely destroyed the boat, broke the guide's leg, broke the steering and the console out of it, and they had to idle in, holding on to the engine to go back up river to the lodge where they could get that guy.
Goodness. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that can happen, though. I mean, I mean, and something that big, I mean, can, like you say, can just take your console completely out. I mean, it can take everything in the boat out completely.
You can take a, you know, 150, 200-pound tarpon, totally green, not wore down, and put him in the boat. That's ugly.
Yeah.
Real ugly.
He's trying to get out. There ain't no doubt that's what he's trying to do. He just wants out of that boat.
Crazy. Yeah,
but he don't want to be in there with them sharks either. So that's
probably what run him out of the water. And those boys weren't gonna jump out of that boat and let that tarpon have it, because what was in the water, all the sharks. So
I guarantee you, I don't blame them. There ain't no doubt. It's time
all
to
right,
go
Richard,
whooping on them.
I got a roll, my friend. If somebody wants to call you about coming over to Conroe and hooking up, give them some info.
All right, Mickey, anyone get in touch with me, 936-661-7920. You can find me on Facebook. Just check out the Fish Dudes Guide Service. You can email me at admin@fishdudetx.com or just check out the webpage, fishdudetx.com.
All right, buddy. Well, you have a good day, and we'll see what this rain does. We'll talk
Yes, sir. Y'all be careful out there.
See you, Richard. Take care, man.
Bye.
All right. It's time for our top of the hour break. You're listening to the Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We'll be right back.